What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Avalanche Warning, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and proudly sponsored by DraftKings Sportsbook. I am Bailey Curtis, joined today again by Grant Foster, Gavin Osagera, and another guest, which if you've seen the title of this episode, you already know who it is, but we're going to tease it throughout. Super exciting interview. Thank you so much to our friend for coming on. But while we wait and make you guys wait for that interview, let's go ahead and talk about the best team in the NHL. And no, I am not just being biased. This is the first team to 30 points in the NHL, currently sitting at 31 in first through 19 games, 13 wins, one regulation loss, and five overtime losses. Is this a wagon? Like, I'll ask that pure outright. Like, is this Avs team a wagon?
Yeah, I mean, five wins in a row is definitionally a wagon. So that's, you're officially a covered wagon, especially with the Civil War general Brock Nelson at the helm. No, I mean, it's, yeah.
I think we're there at six.
Six wins. I just got caught up with all the winning.
It's hard to remember. Yeah.
It's hard to remember.
Too much going on.
But no, I think it's like, are there holes in the Avs game? Sure. Like, that's with every team, but every other team out there has had significant problems that you're worried about. And the Avs are just like, maybe touch up this, maybe touch up that. Yeah, I think you're feeling good, honestly, at this point in the season. So are the players. You saw it practice this morning. There's, like, kids on the ice. Gabe Landeskog's kid getting a fight with Landeskog. So, big fight.
He learns
big
from the best.
Broke out at the Avs practice today. So
I think the biggest thing to take away from the first 19 games is maybe outside the end of the Sharks game, the end of the Utah Mammoth game at home, and maybe outside of the Boston game in the third period, there's always been one line or one D pairing or Wedgewood or Blackwood or Miner to kind of keep the Avalanche in a game that maybe they don't have. Maybe if like two of the top four lines aren't having it, you know, there's at least one line that kind of keeps everything in it, or a defensive pairing that keeps them in a game. Or it's Scott Wedgewood playing really well, or it's Trent Miner coming in against the Carolina Hurricanes and getting them to be able to come back and force OT, or it's Blackwood playing, you know, maybe not the most stellar goaltending, but good enough goaltending. And, you know, there hasn't yet been a full 60 minutes where this team has like nothing's working, where the top line's not doing anything, the second line's not doing anything, the third line, fourth line, all the D pairs and the goalie. Like, that has not happened yet. And I think that's a really big testament to how well training camp started and how well the preseason talks went with this team, of, you know, having Landeskog back, the focus of kind of going back to the Stanley Cup playoffs, not being the same team that you went out in the first round last year, and everything like that. Even though there have been injuries, I think just like that, most of everybody has stepped up. I think the only person who really hasn't maybe is some of the rookies that, like, Taylor McCarr, or players that honestly they're just thrown in for 5 minutes in a game just because we need another skater and we're not going to put seven defensemen out there. But other than, I mean, you know, as someone has contributed in each of the games that have resulted in either an OT loss or a very close loss in the Bruins game, or a win. So, and there's been no game yet, that everybody has just laid an egg for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think if we're going to get into like the three last games here, and then every single one of them, you're seeing some type of line other than McKinnon's line give you scoring. And every single one of those has been backed up by mostly stellar goaltending, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think you're right on the money, Grant.
Yeah. Let's dive into some of that, I guess, and we'll sort of go situationally game by game. Starting off with this Ducks win. And Avalanche come out of this one 4-1, facing off against one of the best young forwards in the league in Leo Carlson. Ultimately, take this one and, you know, start off the homestand in a positive manner, which is huge for the amount of time that they are sitting here at home. Top line, huge. Arturi Lehkonen getting back on the board. Leo Carlson being the Ducks' only scorer in that first period. Gabriel Landeskog finally gets on the board, which can we mention that for a second? I don't know if there's some like weird voodoo or you know, stage situation that needs to happen, but it was so nice to finally see him get that one. And then Martin Necas and Parker Kelly finished things off. Gabe Landeskog's credited with the game winner. Overall, this is a prime example of depth. You've got two of your top line guys providing, in a Martin Necas goal, getting helpers from each of his line mates. Arturi Lehkonen getting help from a Nathan McKinnon and a Cale Makar, who is in the top 10 in scoring when it comes to points, which is still, it blows my mind. But you get some help from a Parker Kelly on an empty netter too, which is, again, it's an empty netter, so take with that what you will. But Parker Kelly has been a steady force on the score sheet night in and night out as well. I'm thoroughly impressed with some of the depth that's been showcased in a lot of these games. And I feel like a lot of that conversation starts with a guy like Parker Kelly.
Yeah, for sure. I just want to remind everybody that Parker Kelly was a throwaway by the Ottawa Senators. Just did not redeem his contract. Didn't like him. Avs got him for free, and he's still an RFA. So thanks, Ottawa. Just helping us every single step of our way. Thanks for taking Duchesne. Thanks for everything, Ottawa. Couldn't do it without you. But no, I mean, yeah, I think that Ducks game was a pretty fun one. You're seeing a lot of like games now where the Avs don't have to be the team, bless you, that gets up to like the 3-goal lead, even though you'd love it in the first period. You see a lot where they get the first goal, some lapse thing happens, like a Leo Carlson gets another goal, and suddenly it's tied. And yet you just roar back and take over the game. You just don't let it affect you. And I think that's a really good habit to instill this early on in the season. And when we will talk about the next two games, you can see it in those as well. It's a really sustainable winning formula for the Avs to do this. And it's something I didn't see last year against Dallas. And it's something that, honestly, I haven't seen from the Avalanche from a very, very long time. And you know what? Lightning finally strikes twice. You get a power play goal from Martin Necas. And probably the best highlight reel empty netter ever. Hard work by Nelson and McKinnon. So yeah, deserved, you know what? In terms of empty netters, that's like one of the best ones I've ever seen. I don't know if that's something I could – I don't know if that's a highlight reel, but sure, yeah.
Looking at this game before throwing it over to you, Grant, and maybe this is something you can help answer as well. Yes, this was a 4-1 loss for the Ducks. But have you guys been surprised at all with the amount of success that they're having?
Nope. I called from the summer. If we go back into one of our first couple episodes, I remember me and Gavin particularly saying, with Joel Quenneville at the helm for the Anaheim Ducks, they're going to be a dark horse that are going to make the playoffs. Yeah. Now, if we could just clip that and like go back to when we talked about it, that would be great.
Find the receipts.
Enter the transition.
Yeah, exactly. Enter transition or Twilight Zone. But yeah, no, I'm not surprised. You hire a capable, great coach in Joel Quenneville, and guess what? Your team is performing well with the young stars. That guy knows how to coach emerging talent. He did it with Chicago. Yeah. You know, if you're upset that, you know, and if you're upset that he has a job in hockey right now, yeah, but you know, he's a great coach.
Yeah. I think credit to Leo Carlson, second overall, went right behind Connor Bedard. It was for a reason. That kid is awesome. Papa Leo is cooking in there. But Cutter Gauthier, Flyers legend, also rocks. That guy is people love to glaze Dylan Gunther on the Utah Mammoth. I hear everyone say, like, oh, he's going to be a 50 goal scorer one day. But and people give similar credit to Gauthier. They say, oh, that's easily a 40 goal scorer in the NHL. Gauthier is ahead of Gunther right now. I'll tell you right now.
Absolutely.
Gauthier is a much more accomplished, just in the confidence he has in shooting. Like, that guy is, I think he's like one of the top five highest shooting forwards right now. He's like in McKinnon's tier. So you take out Greg Cronin, who is a joke of a coach and should never coach anybody, and suddenly your team becomes top in the division. Yeah,
I gotta say, I think Cutter Gauthier has a lot more help than I think Dylan Gunther has.
Clayton Keller, you think?
He's got Clayton Keller and JJ Paterka. Don't even come at me with Logan Cooley. That kid, he's not there yet. Not there yet. Really? He'll be there in a year. He's not there yet. But like with the Ducks, you have Lacombe, you have Killorn, you have Kreider, Carlson, you have Zellweger on the back end, you have Menchikov, you've got Troy Terry, you've got Mason McTavish. Like, you have a lot of young emerging.
Beckett Seneca as well.
I missed him. And you know, you have a plethora of more options if you're Cutter Gauthier compared to Dylan Gunther.
Yeah.
That's my only argument that maybe Dylan Gunther is getting more of a spotlight because he's doing it with not as much help. Like, all of those prospects, they are going to be, they're either here or they're going to be here next season. Yeah. And I, you know,
some guy tried to take Cutter Gauthier off my hands and try and trade me Will Smith. I just laughed. The easiest denial of my life.
Well, don't you need to slap rocks?
Yeah, I had to slap him around for that one. But no, I mean, yeah, no, I think the Ducks are a promising team. You love to see it, honestly, in the Pacific. The California teams are taking over. And someone needs to bring life to that soft division. Someone needs to challenge some of the other teams there. So I'm happy because the Canucks just fell apart. And
biggest collapse of the 2020s right there.
I want to mention that during that Ducks game, Brent Burns was the only guy in the negative on this plus minus.
That doesn't surprise me. They put him out in 4-on-4. What did they expect?
Yeah, you
can't put him out on four. Brenton Burns. Brenton Burns is a great asset.
You can't put him out on 4-on-4.
You know who else I want to see on 4-on-4 compared over Brent Burns? I want to see, now this takes a little bit to swallow right here, but I want to see Samuel Girard. I want to see Sam Malinsky. I want to see Josh Manson, Cale Makar, Devon Taves, Jack Sean. Literally anybody else. Because no offense to Brent Burns, he doesn't have the speed anymore. I love him. I mean, Soloviov, maybe Brent Burns can be a little bit better than, but
Soloviov,
like,
needs to be, I think he has been deported from, but like, country. I hope.
No, he was a practice today.
Damn it.
But yeah, like, you know, that's misuse by Bednar. That's misuse by Bednar.
But no, I definitely agree with you. But no, it's someone that a defenseman that I do think is, but Burns has been great. Burns has had 10 points in
He's been sneaky good on that blue line.
Not even. Brent Burns is almost like a 40-point base right now.
Yeah, I know.
He's a defenseman. So is Sam Malinsky. So that's also somebody I wanted to credit. Like,
hey, obviously
Burns is still got it, but Malinsky's been really, really good. I like his play a lot. He's really, like, every time they pass back to the point, I feel comfortable with it. I'm like, oh, Malinsky's going to cook something up. And he has. He has a lot of the time. Malinsky's honestly, in my mind, he's made himself untradeable as a guy on the right side. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the underlying numbers and just how good he's been, this is not a guy where it's like, oh, it's a throw-in on a trade. This is a guy that's like, nah, dude, this is going to be a main piece of any trade. So if you are going to trade Sam Malinsky, it better be for something good. Because honestly, I love Malinsky. Honestly, he's great.
Hey, Maple Leafs fans, you know that Brent Burns at 41 years old is going to have more points than your highest paid defenseman in Morgan Rielly. How does that feel, Maple Leafs fans?
I will say Sam Malinsky for me is just another notch in the depth conversation. Like you're looking at a situation where in years past, I can't recall a situation where a defenseman has earned, a third pairing defenseman has earned as much trust as a guy like Sam Malinsky has. And especially with as much as we all know, Jared Bednar loves Sam Girard, him being back, he's really enjoyed what he's seen from what Megan calls the Sam's Club. And I think that's hilarious. But just kind of honing back in on Malinsky, this is a guy who's taken a really, really large step in his game. And while he is very, very reliable defensively, he's produced some really good offense. We'll get into the Isles game here in a little bit, but that shot that he takes that Victor Olofsson kind of bats out of midair and kind of right place, right time with his stick, creating shots like that that are on net or at least in the general direction, creating some offense that way. Like it's a really strong point of his game for a guy who is on the smaller side too. And that's what's also very, very surprising to me is that this pairing is together and for the most part is really solid through the two games Sam Girard has been back. I haven't seen Sam hindering Malinsky at all. Or I haven't seen Girard hindering Malinsky at all. I think his game has continued to flourish these last two. Getting on the board with an assist during the last one. This is a guy I've really, really enjoyed watching through all three zones of the ice.
Oh, yeah. I think the only thing that I'm asking more for Malinsky right now is goals. Like, yeah. He has a really good shot. Yeah. And I get it. Like the primary for who Malinsky is, what his game is, like his primary offense comes from assists. And I'm just asking for some sprinkles on top of my cherry sundae here when I'm asking for goals. But he's got a great shot. And I've noticed that a little bit in recent games. It doesn't feel like Malinsky's trying to take a lot of shots as he was, but the willingness to shoot from the point and the playmaking he has is all there. It's just like, Malinsky, give me a goal.
I will say what makes it difficult is that point shot is something that not just Sam Malinsky tries. Like you see that point shot from a lot of different players on this team. And it's gotten to the point where I'm fairly certain it's becoming like a scouting issue.
For sure.
Heading into this team because they're starting to telegraph things like that. And those shots maybe are not nearly as dangerous as you'd see a year ago, 2 years ago.
I didn't really mean the point shot as much. I more actually meant like Sam Malinsky kind of doing a Cale Makar impression and just.
Absolutely.
I noticed that a little less for Malinsky. I'd like to see that come through, but Malinsky did get robbed quite a bit. A few games ago, so I can assume why he's just like, I'm gonna play it safe and still rack up assists. Whatever, it's working out for now.
It's working out.
I will say, I think to your point, Bailey, about the Avalanche being predictable, I think they're being predictable because they get like Bednar said after the Utah Mammoth game that they lost in overtime, they just get stubborn. They get stubborn with what they want to do, and they don't learn. They almost like. They almost don't learn until it's like too late, which is hilarious to say because they've only had one regulation loss. But the only thing that someone keeps stepping up. And the thing is that in the broadcast, they actually like highlighted on it and they were talking about how the Islanders, all they were doing was clogging up the home plate, which is, you know, the dots and the slot, the high slot and in front of the net. That's like all they were doing. And so they finally kind of realized, oh, we're just going to start. We're going to play around the perimeter. We're going to play around the boards and get them outside and break that little defensive shell that they have in front of the slot. And, you know, when you talk about them being predictable, I completely agree. But I also just think that's a stubbornness where they kind of forget that as much as they need to stick to their game plan and do what they need to do as a part of the overall system, they also need to adapt to what other teams are giving them. And which is what I think you saw from the Islanders, especially in the second period. I think the third, my opinion on the third period is a little bit different from Bailey's, as we were talking before, but still that Malinsky or the Olofsson goal from the Malinsky shot is a perfect example of when the team isn't giving you what you're looking for, you need to find a different way to approach that. And I think Malinsky did a great job of just putting that puck on net. He knew he had Olofsson there. Landeskog was close by. And, you know, I think that's one thing I like to see from the Avalanches and what's been contributing to their success. They switch late, but they don't switch late enough for it to be a problem. I just wish they do it a little bit earlier, because it was clear in that first period that they were not getting anything through the middle of the ice. And they finally corrected course in the second period. But, you know, like if you're playing a good team like the Stars, or God, it's such like a hodgepodge this year of like everybody's kind of close. But like, you know, if you're playing playoff caliber teams, you got to learn it quicker than that. You can't take a whole period to finally get there.
Yeah.
That's fair. That Islanders game, I think, was definitely they started to find their game after that first period. There were, I think, maybe 2 or 3 minutes of that first period that I think I liked. The rest is kind of a wash for me. And in talking about that predictability, a lot of that went away as the game went on, especially in the ozone to the high slot pass. The Islanders started telegraphing that wicked early, and they fixed it. Or at least found a way to get a little bit more creative with it, or at least force movement lower in the zone.
The Islanders telegraphed?
Yeah.
That's.
I thought you meant the Avalanche were telegraphing what they were
doing. No, no. The Islanders started picking off those high slot passes really, really easily. And they started to get a little bit more creative with drawing New York deeper in their zone to get those passes off, which is exactly what you want to see from a smart playoff contending team.
Yeah. I also want to mention, like, obviously we're talking about these three games, but it's now numerous games in where, like, there used to be such a conversation around the Avs where it was like, oh, the Avs can't beat good teams. All the Avs are doing are crushing hopes and dreams right now. Mm-hmm. They're going up against the Vegas Golden Knights. And then ever since then, the Knights have just been blah. They honestly be the better of two teams against the Devils. They snap a 5-game win streak against the Lightning. They just going down the line. I was hoping it wouldn't be a get right game for the Oilers. I hope it kind of is for the Oilers in a way that you wouldn't think, where they just completely murder them 9-1. And they go against the Canucks, who are being a bit of a tough more team recently. Elias Pettersson is looking better. Quinn Hughes has decided not to play injured for most of the season. Appreciate that. And then you're going against the Ducks team, who was surging and was talking a lot of disrespect, children. So it was mm-hmm. good to teach them. And same with the Islanders, a team that was also forgetting that they're supposed to tank and get good prospects. So it's a lot of help for all these teams here. And suddenly, like, the Avs are just beating all of these surging teams. I don't know what else you want to see.
Yeah. Power the one
play
team.
Goals.
Hmm?
What?
Power play goals, please.
Power what play do you goals? Mean? Yeah, that'd be nice.
That's what I want to see.
Oh.
I think, yeah, I think we can. I mean, power play is, I think it's trending up. Like it's definitely not as lethargic as it used to be. I actually can enjoy watching a little bit of it. It's like, all right, the process is getting there. They're finding it and it's starting to reward them every once in a while. And I feel like that's also a great segue to talk about a player like that, and that's Brock Nelson, who
like
also is same thing. It's like the process is great. He's doing everything right. He's shooting a lot more than he was last year and creating more. Last season, it was interesting because I saw people comparing it because he played 19 games with the Avs beforehand after the trade deadline and then 19 now. So it's kind of fun comparing both of their numbers. And even though Brock Nelson has been a better player than he was then, he still has less points. So a little unlucky for him there, but it's starting to come. He has 7 in his last 10. Like, you're looking at him and saying, like, get more points, and the uptick is happening. So you're happy with that.
No, and that's exactly what I was going to mention too, is that's something Bednar mentioned as being a big point for him, is this is a guy who's snake bitten, but in every sense of, you know, being a good hockey player, that is the epitome of Brock Nelson. He's doing everything right. He's seen, if anything, an improvement to his game here in the last couple. And I mean, the production's coming as a result of it.
Yeah, but he's on, and honestly has been the best defensively he's been in his entire career, which is very interesting to think. I think I know we talked so much, mostly me, about the effect Ray Bennett had on the power play, but also what Dave Haxtell and Ray Bennett used to do is also manage the forwards and work on their systems. And I don't think it's a coincidence that under Dave Haxtell, the Avs look like a well-oiled machine. And a guy like Brock Nelson, who did play under Dave Haxtell when they played in college. I can't remember which one, but he was his coach, Brock Nelson. Dave Haxtell was Brock Nelson's coach when they were playing double NCAA hockey. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Brock Nelson looks probably the best in his entire game, while more well-rounded, because I think the guy is looking a lot more like Nazem Kadri did his first 2 years. Instead of that last one, which everyone loves to remember and hype about, just go get a point per game, 2 second line center. Like, why didn't I think of that? Oh, wow.
The only game that we haven't really touched on in this last 3-game stretch, do want to mention, yes, while the Buffalo Sabres may not be the same in the same league, quote unquote, as the Ducks and the Isles, there's still something I think really good to take out of this game. That being, it was another win in the win column. 6-3, 4-goal first period, mind you. But you're getting goals from, again, a guy like Brock Nelson, who's contributing and factoring in. And not to mention, Grant's going to hate me for bringing this back up again, and we'll talk a little bit more about it in our interview segment later. But this is the first game that you see Gavin Brindley step up onto the second line in the absence of Valeri Nichushkin, who is week to week. We'll hopefully get some more updates here in the next week or two. He was out on the ice today in sneakers, doing some stick handling, which... For a guy like Valeri Nichushkin, you can't keep him away from the rink for long. But this Brock Nelson goal, you get a really, really smart pass from a guy like Ross Colton, and you get a really good vision pass from a guy like Gavin Brindley.
Through the legs.
Yeah, for that to gel as quickly as it did kind of blows my mind a little bit.
Yeah, I think Nelson has played with guys like that his entire career. Guys like Colton and Brindley, in the way that they play, very, very just get the details right, do the right things. I think that that's a lot of who Nelson has always played with. I was a little interested to see that Nelson and Nichushkin hadn't been doing as well with each other. I think because, like, Nichushkin is like a better version of everyone that he's ever played with. And, I think it's a lot of Nelson being like, I have to defer to Nichushkin, or I have to defer to Landy or Colton or whatever. Yeah, and I think this has forced Nelson to be like, oh, I am the adult by a lot of years, by the way. And it's kind of just, I'm making fun of his age, by the way. And it's, so I think that that's what that forced to do. But yeah, I mean, you see the Sabres game, and it's just your average fun Sabres game where the Avs just have to beat down an opponent that doesn't realize that they're nothing in life. And it's Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's a great play by Gavin Brindley to get out there and score. Another thing I want to throw some Schadenfreude, something I saw after the Isles game that I just completely forgot to remember until now.
Forgot to remember.
I noticed. Remember the guy that we traded Brock Nelson for, the next Patrice Bergeron? I didn't know him at all.
Was invisible?
Invisible. You know who I did notice, though? Gavin Brindley. Just hashtag noticing. That is a little fascinating there. But anyway. Yeah.
No, he's 20 years old.
21.
He's 21.
Can drink.
He's 21 coming out of the OHL. He's not going to be great now.
He's not coming out of the OHL.
Double NCAA AHL.
Was he double and
no
NC double? No, he played with the Cleveland Monsters last year.
Was in the AHL.
We're talking about Callum Ritchie. We're talking about Callum Ritchie.
No. Oh, no.
I'm talking about the one that went multiple picks later and already looks like a better NHLer, Gavin Brindley.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, we're talking about a guy who is no. Callum Ritchie, he's gonna get there. It's gonna take time. Everybody takes time differently.
Talk about Callum Ritchie's gonna get there.
Wow. I would never do that for a player. By
The only thing, I want to pitch in on the Buffalo Sabres. You know,
could never be me.
Couldn't be me.
The only thing I want to pitch in on the Buffalo Sabres conversation is I want to make this painstakingly obvious because I know there are people in my very own household who disagree with me. That was not goaltender interference. It was not. Because one, Lukanen is outside of the crease. First of all, he's outside of the crease. He's not even in the crease to make the save on the Landeskog goal. Not even there. And you know what else? The other problem is people are saying like Jack Drury skated into him like he had a wide open lane and there wasn't a guy right behind him. What do you like? Even if he didn't get pushed, there's no room for him to get out of that situation. There's not even a lane for him to skate past or even jump over Lukanen in that situation.
Do you know what the solution is to that, Grant?
Don't call goaltender interference.
It's to be coached by TJ Luxemore, who doesn't give a damn about goalies.
But especially when they get pushed into. It just doesn't make sense.
Against the Sabres.
Goalie interference does not make sense. If the goal, you honest to God, I can't
Throw
tell
away
you
the book.
I can't Burn. Tell you what goaltender interference was. But let me tell you something. That was not goaltender interference. The refereeing this year in particular has been wildly inaccurate. I mean, we watched Parker Kelly last night get hit, and the interference call was on Parker Kelly. I mean, what do we? I mean,
that
like
was,
refer,
that was bad.
Refereeing has been bad. It has been bad in years. But I cannot tell how many blown calls there have been this season where they just blatantly get it wrong. And a lot of it goes the Avalanche's way too. There was an icing where Wedgwood literally goes to go play the puck, and they still called icing. I don't understand how we can go year after year after year after year with the same referees. It's not like there's any. I haven't seen anybody I haven't recognized over the last 2 years, and they're still getting worse call after worse call, and we still don't have a definitive answer of what goaltender interference is, what offside is, what anything is. It's just terrible. That Sabre, the Jack Drury goaltender interference, you see that like 10 times a game. You saw in the Islanders game where Sorokin's out of his crease and he dumps the puck out and people are skating into him. It's not goaltender interference. I honestly, refereeing has been the worst this season that I can think of in the past 3 years. I can't remember many blown calls. I watched four different games on the same night the other day, and I couldn't tell you how many Martin Nietzsche is tripped in open ice, and they're not even calling it.
Yeah, I will agree, Grant, though. I was thinking to myself the same thing. I was like, this stretch of games, like, it's probably heightened by the whole Landeskog being cursed. But, like, this stretch of last few games here, and just in general, this is the worst like reffing I have seen in a while, ever, really. And I used to be on the side of the refs, like when the cup year, I was like, oh man, people are too hard on the officials. And every year I've just become a worse person to where I am now. And to the point where like I was at the Ducks game with my girlfriend, and the refs come out, everyone boos them, and she's like, why are you being so mean? And I was like, I can't even begin to describe you. The level of hatred I have.
The funny thing me about the ref booing is it gets gradually worse with each period. Like the third period is deserved. The worse.
You should go home and have depression. NHL refs, you should.
I mean, honestly, the fact that the MLB, one of the most archaic leagues in sports, has corrected the official or umpiring of their games by instituting a review system at the end of the year where people are graded, and if you're not doing a good enough job, you don't get it. You don't have an MLB umpiring gig anymore. You're being sent down or you're being retrained. This is, honest to God, I have never seen more blown calls in a season Avalanche included. I have never seen so many blown calls. Even when they call the penalty, they called the wrong thing. Like they called a hook and call an interference. And I'm like, no, it wasn't even an interference. It was a hook. Like how bad is this every single year? And I know we don't have the audience that anybody like, you know, big people do like Steve Dangle or empty netters or whatever. But like, man, it is bad this year in particular. Yeah. Across the board.
Yeah, I have to agree. It really is. It feels really bad. Like there were, especially the last game against the Isles. Like obviously you'll get Netches flipping a puck up. Like, but you get the Parker Kelly one. That's a penalty on him, really. Like
he was not happy about that either.
No,
as he shouldn't have been.
It really has felt like it's gone off the rails, and it's something that's just been getting progressively worse. And the community knows it too. It's not great.
I mean, I watched.
But anyway, I don't want to dive too far.
Hold on, I want to wrap this up by one thing. I watched a Boston Bruins game where I watched Hampus Lindholm and Nikita Zadorov absolutely floor somebody in their most recent game. I can't remember who it was against, and they got no call. No penalty, but I flip over to a guy on the Canucks skating into Blackwood like 10 seconds after the whistle's blown, and Cale Makar throws him down on the ice, and they gave him a roughing call. Like, referees, figure out your... I know it's hard. The game moves at 20 miles an hour. You're on skates, and you're at ice level where you can't really... where sometimes it's hard to see stuff. But we have instant replay for a reason. Figure it out.
And to just add on to that, also, there's like a kicking controversy going on right now too, with a lot of kick goals.
That was a goal.
Yeah, no, but there seems to be a lot of that happening where like Jonathan Drouin had one the night before. There just seems to be also a lot of that too. So a lot of things are bad in the NHL reffing rules book world.
Yeah. Dear Lord, figure it out, man. This season's been hard to watch some days.
Not if you're an Avs fan though.
Not if you're an Avs fan, but from
unless your name is Grant Foster.
But if you're watching
on the Calgary Flames, see how they're
doing. When I watch neutral games, I mean the refereeing has been terrible, just absolutely god awful.
Yeah.
If there is nothing else to add for this last stretch of three games,
the only thing I had to really end on is Blackwood, I know you said you wanted more ice time. You're going to have a hard time getting it with the performance that Wedgie just put up last night. You're going to have to, in your next start, you're going to have to show something that proves to Bednar there's going to be a 1A and a 1B, and you're both fighting for 1A.
It's a situation that Parker Kelly called a 1A and 1A minus, though. And I asked Bednar about that today, actually, if there was any concern that, you know, Mackenzie Blackwood is the guy you signed long term with a high AAV to be your starter. Is there any concern that he's not earning some of those minutes over a Scott Wedgwood? And he said no. They're going to get to a point down. He's got a lot. There's a lot of hockey left to play. And
yeah,
Mackenzie Blackwood has the opportunity to earn those minutes, and he's going to, like Bednar said point blank, like, it does not matter. Mackenzie Blackwood's going to get those minutes.
Yeah. And looking at the schedule you have, you obviously played the New York Rangers on Thursday. I wonder if that's Blackwood's game, because then on Saturday,
he said he'll get in at least once this week.
Right. Because you also have a back to back with Nashville and Chicago. So I would assume, I don't know. I would say give Blackwood Nashville as your confidence booster, give Wedgwood Hawks. That's kind of how I break it down.
Oh, fair.
Yeah.
With that, I'm going to go ahead and throw it over to our wonderful sponsors in DraftKings. They've been kind enough to support us the last couple seasons with the Hockey Podcast Network. Let's hear what they have to say. Hockey is back, and this season, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, brings you all the speed, skill, and nonstop action you love. DraftKings Sportsbook delivers the unmatched intensity of the NHL right to your fingertips. From player props to the thrill of live in-game betting, every drop of the puck is your shot to win big. Now, Grant, here you got some odds for us over here.
Have you been watching the dumpster fire that is the Toronto Maple Leafs this season? Well, you can bet on the St. Louis Blues at Toronto Maple Leafs game tonight at 5:10 p.m., where the Maple Leafs surprisingly are favored because the St. Louis Blues don't know how to win a hockey game either. The Maple Leafs are favored at minus 135, and the St. Louis Blues are underdogs at plus 114 on the money line, with the over-under set at 5.5. You can also bet on goal scorers. Now, this game may not have any goal scorers at all, but if it does, you might want to bet it on William Nylander or Jonathan Tavares, as they're the only ones who can put the puck in the net for the Maple Leafs. Remember that these odds are always subject to change, and we do not offer any gambling advice.
I don't know. If I'm looking at betting, DraftKings got some good options here for these goal scorers. I might start, looking at that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. New customers, this one is for you. Bet just $5, and if your bet wins, you'll get paid out in $300 in bonus bets instantly. Light the lamp all season long with DraftKings. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN to turn $5 into $300 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text H-O-P-E-N-Y 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, pass-through of per wager tax may apply in Illinois. 21 plus age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Restrictions apply. Bets must win to receive bonus bets, which expire in 7 days. Minimum odds required. For additional terms and responsible gambling resources, see dkng.co/audio. Limited time offer. Copyright NHL 2025. All rights reserved. Big thank you again to our sponsors over at DraftKings Sportsbook. With that, we've teased an interview for long enough now. Want to throw it over to our interview with radio play-by-play broadcaster Connor McGahee. He was kind enough to sit down with us while he was on his way home to chat about this Avs season so far, with a couple of nuances to talk about, some voodoo situation, goaltending, power play. What's the big focus for the Avs heading into this postseason? We talk about it all. Again, big thank you to Connor McGahee for hopping on. Gonna throw it over to that interview. All right, Connor.
Hello.
We've got a bit of a wagon on our hands with the Colorado Avalanche. So far, there are some things from last year, the hunger coming out of the first round exit that was not ideal for this team, that I think has sparked a lot of this team. Just so far, what are you seeing that is making this team as dangerous as it is?
Bailey, it's funny you say that, because before the season, I said, you know what? 2021 was necessary to win in 2022. And what I mean by that is, you were up to nothing in the series versus the Golden Knights. And then you lost four straight to lose the series. You had a chance specifically Mikko Rantanen had a chance to seal things and put the Golden Knights away in game three. And my, how the turntables after that. And the Avs lost four straight and lost the series. But that was the famous Nathan MacKinnon, I haven't won S presser after that.
Yeah.
Right? And so that was the, I mean, if you want a mood, that was the mood of everybody, was that. And I don't think anything's a bigger motivating factor than that. So you saw, even though it was sort of coasting towards the end of that 21-22 regular season and the Avalanche having one of the best seasons in modern NHL history, sort of cruising down the stretch, and then everyone thought, well, are they even going to be ready for the postseason? And then all of a sudden they show up and just smack Nashville right in the face four straight times and sweep them. And then finally get over the hump in the second round with St. Louis with what, in my opinion, one of the biggest goals in Avalanche history and Darren Helm's winner in game six. Yeah. And then you sweep Connor McPickles and the Edmonton Oilers. And then you win the Stanley Cup. So I'm just saying that it was necessary for the Avalanche to lose in 21 to win in 22. And I get the exact same feeling in 2000, in fall of 25, that I got in fall of 21. And so that's a motivating factor, whether they're doing it for themselves or a team, or maybe Brent Burns with a little bit of a Ray Bourque feel to him, you know, the old grizzled vet who's been around, who hasn't won yet. I mean, there's a ton of motivating factors here. But yeah, I've said that a couple times now, that 21 was necessary for 22, and I think that 25 and the loss to Dallas is necessary for 26.
I remember talking to you in Carolina about, you know, the what was a hot, very funny. I remember talking to you in Carolina about, you know, what was a dangerous Carolina Hurricanes team then with Brent Burns. Now he's on the Avalanche. What kind of addition is he to this locker room? I mean, of course, we both see what's going on in the locker room, but just seeing what he's able to do on the ice for this team, like how big of an addition has that been?
Well, I believe we also talked about how dangerous Marty Natchez was at the time, not knowing what we didn't know. Right. The foreshadowing was immense. But for Brent Burns, I mean, I look at me and my lack of athletic ability as a 40-year-old, and, you know, you get out of bed in the morning and it's sore and you're groaning and stuff, and then you watch Brent Burns out there as a 40-year-old. We made the connection at one point. You're like, wait, you're an 85? You're an 85? Cool. And I said, well, we're in total different places from physically where we are. And, you know, he can go out there and play 24 minutes a night and not bat an eye or an eyelash. And I, you know, pull a muscle going down the steps. And so, you know, it's a testament to how he's been his whole career. And we, as an Avalanche fan, you would detest him his whole career. Drafted by Minnesota, that's a lot of people's number one rival now. Still is the Wild, whatever a Wild is. And right. then he's traded to San Jose, right where he spends most of his career there. And you know, the Sharks were a good team. Ousted the Avalanche in the 2010 playoffs, 2019 playoffs. So you sort of learn to hate Brent Burns because of the teams that he played on. But when you meet him and you talk to him, you said, this is a very unhateable human. Everybody loves him automatically. You saw what everybody did. And I mean, everybody with the tank tops for his 1500th career NHL game. You don't do that if you're a jerk to people or people don't like you. And so for him being around for about 8.5 minutes at that point and guys going the extra distance to do something for their teammate that way shows you all you need to know about Brent Burns. So physically, you know, you can't tell a letdown between a 40-year-old Brent Burns and a 30-year-old Brent Burns. And then, you know, as our old friend Peter McNabb used to say, you need character on a team that wins and you need characters. And Brent Burns is very much obviously he is one of those characters. So he's exactly what the Avalanche needed. And, it's fantastic that he ended up in Colorado.
Speaking of characters in the locker room, a guy that Jared Bednar called a really good content guy in Scott Wedgwood earning himself a 1-year extension. I loved that, by the way. Does Jared Bednar have a proper goaltender battle on his hands with Mackenzie Blackwood coming back into the fold?
I don't know if he does or it does it matter. Like, are the Avs winning? Are they winning with, like, who cares who's in the net? I mean, that's what I've had to sort of say to some of, I mean, I'm not trying to be callous or anything. I'm just saying that, like, what does it matter who the number one is? You have a, you know, if you have a guy who's playing well and the other goaltender's 2-0-1 in his 3 games that he has played. But I think coaches, no matter who you are or what point in the season you're in, you're going to play the goaltender who's playing the best. And right now, Scott Wedgwood, big content guy, is playing the best, leading the National Hockey League in wins with 10. Or is 11 now? No, it's 10.
I think it's
11? It's 10. It's 10.
Is it 10? Sorry. Okay. See, he's won so much, I just can't keep track anymore.
It's hard.
Yeah, right, exactly. But he has the advantage of starting the season as the number one goaltender, and that's where everyone needs to be patient, because up until this point, Mackenzie Blackwood has played 3 games in 100 and maybe 200 days, right? And so he even said it the other night. He said, just getting used to the pace and the anticipation and knocking the rust off. And that's a real thing for players at any position, and I think even more so a goaltender. So I don't think it's necessarily fair to say there's a goaltending battle, because the situations are not even, right? It's not like they both started the season healthy and one is just not playing well and the other is. The circumstances are totally different, which is why I've had to say, hey, just you know, hang tight. He's going to play the best goaltender, and then try and balance it out with getting as much reps as you can with the other goalie as well. So the Avs are in a good spot with that. Anecdotally, as far as Scott Wedgwood as a content guy goes, the way that the arena is set up in Vancouver, there's no room for the goalie on the bench. And so instead of being, you know, in timeout like you are in San Jose or in Winnipeg across the ice, you're actually back in a hallway and you're just watching the whole game on a monitor. And so Brendan McNicholas puts him on as my first intermission guest in a game in Vancouver. And he goes, you know, I can't see the game anyhow. I might as well just stay on with you the entire time and be an analyst. I said, yeah, we totally should do that. Then he pretty much did the same thing during the game for Altitude TV the other day. So
I was like going to mention, Johnson. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you're just, some guys are just born for it. And Scott Wedgwood is born for that kind of stuff.
Before letting Grant kind of get to his question, that was something I was going to bring up too. And hearing how he sees the game and how he preps and what kind of goes into it, the way he speaks so eloquently on it, not just in media pressers, but on broadcast.
He has so much information, Bailey, I'm sure you're referring to that post-game interview on TNT the other night at the Anaheim game. So he sort of just goes through this whole process of how he prepares and left-hand, right-handed shots. And he's speaking like at the speed of an auctioneer. 375, 375, 400. Do I hear? 4.25, 475, 500 now, 5.5. But he's like getting all this information in like a digestible way.
Yeah.
And that's what gives him a natural ability. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, anybody else could have said that and I would have had no clue what you're talking about, but you were able to say it with confidence and make it so, you know, a one-celled organism like me can understand what you're saying. So there's natural talent for Scott Wedgwood all over the place, on the ice and off of it.
I mean, Biz was absolutely floored. I mean, I don't think he kept up with anything that Wedgie was saying that entire interview. I think he kind of just did the smile and wave.
Yeah, he was the Penguins of Madagascar. Smile and wave, boy.
Yeah. So I guess the question that I have for you is, I've been watching the Avalanche for all my life. And you've obviously been, you know, the radio announcer or commentator, you know, for what seems like all my life. Who do you think has grown the most over their tenure with the Colorado Avalanche, and either Jared Bednar or Nathan MacKinnon? Because they both had to learn a lot over the last, you know, 13 years that MacKinnon's been on the Avs. And for Bednar coming in ever since, you know, the infamous 16-17 season.
That's a really good question. And I think that both of them have grown in their own ways, right? I mean, Bednar is now the winningest coach in franchise history. Got win number 400 the other night. that we just sort of glazed over.
Yeah.
Yeah, like no one actually talked about it. I even forgot to mention it the next game. He doesn't know. I guarantee that he didn't know that he got to 400 wins because every time he'd hit a benchmark, he'd be like, yeah, I had no idea. So I'm not sure that he cares. But I think that as much as he's grown, I would probably honestly have to say Nathan McKinnon because there is a mental and an emotional growth that we have seen and even a growth on the ice. I mean, it used to be that McKinnon was – I don't want to say a liability defensively, but, you know, it wasn't exactly, you know, a plus 15, 17 games into the season or whatever he is now. That has changed a lot. And, you know, you are watching the maturing of Nathan McKinnon, which I think has helped. Now, that doesn't take away from his intensity, but I think especially after the Stanley Cup win and the more information that he has got, you know, he's more mature, and that can do nothing but benefit the best player in the world. So if you had to, you know, twist my arm, I would probably say Nathan McKinnon has grown the most over the amount of time that they've both been here. And by the way, McKinnon will see his first ever coach in Patrick Waugh tomorrow when they play the New York Islanders.
Yeah.
Wow. What a clash.
I wouldn't think that the Islanders would be so good, but they've all of a sudden won four in a row, three of those in overtime. So let's just not go to overtime.
Maybe that's the key.
Please.
speaking of the Islanders, want to kind of throw things over to the second line, which maybe hasn't seen as much production as you'd like, especially at a guy like Brock Nelson, who just signed a longer term deal with the team. But so far through 18 games, it seems like every single line on this team has its role. What is Brock Nelson's as of right now?
Well, in your eyes? I think that Brock, the goals are starting to come. And that's, I have maintained that the other night, Ross Colton did that one touch pass on purpose, which is absolutely insane that you would think to do that and then execute. But I've watched it back 74 times and I'm convinced that it's on purpose and a nice finish from Brock Nelson. second of all, everyone, like, he'll get to 20 goals. That's just what Brock Nelson does. He will get there. I just think that if you watch Brock off the puck, tough to play against. And again, going back to 2022, that was the theme for the Avalanche. They were tough to play against. And if you look at the analytics offensively and defensively, I mean, I was looking at tweets the other night playing the Ducks, and Anaheim had the second best record in the NHL coming into Ball Arena. And fans were watching the game on TNT and said, wow, the Avs are just smothering. And that's a feeling that I've got from Brock Nelson a lot. You know, he's a big guy, and he's hard to play against. So he'll get to 20 goals. I'm not worried about that. But it's also defensively in the Colorado zone and in the offensive zone working to check the puck back where he's better than people think. So I think that, you know, his role – of where he is in the lineup right now, he's doing it perfectly as a big body who can score and will score. But again, off the score sheet and on the eye test, he's doing a great job for Colorado.
That pass from Colton, I remember looking at Evan and Colleen up on in the press box, and I'm like, it did not look intentional at all. Such a smart pass, and we don't see that super, super often from a guy like Ross Colton. But I also want to talk about their line mate for on Thursday. Grant hates me talking about this guy. I've loved him so far.
It's so much. I've heard the name Gavin Brindley like at least 30 times in the last 3 days.
As you should. Why?
It's not because I don't like the kid. It's just fatigue at this point because Bailey loves to talk about him with
You leave my boy alone, Grant.
I'm not saying I won't say anything bad about him.
Leave Gavin alone.
I won't say anything bad about him. I'm just like Bailey talks about him a lot, so you know, it's like when you've listened to a song like way too many times and it's just starting to grate against you a little bit. Nothing against you. Thank you for stepping up on the second line. Thank you.
That's what I was going to bring up is you see that incredible pass from Ross Colton, but the vision that Gavin Brindley had to find Colton too, taking that step up. This is a guy who Jared Bednar in the presser following his extension said, this is a guy who could be a top six forward in a lot of other places in the league. What is it about Gavin Brindley that has been, I don't even want to say surprising at this point. Because he comes into camp, comes into preseason, blows everybody's minds. And he's the first guy to get the call once Nichushkin goes down.
Well, I think the one thing that everyone says, it's like in Moneyball when they're talking about physical appearance and, you know, the guy, Chad Bradford throws funny and stuff like that. You look at Gavin Brindley, and there's not many people on this planet that I'm taller than, but I think Gavin Brindley is one of them. And you just look and see how tiny he is.
Yep.
I've decided to call him Mighty Mouse, and he's Mighty Mouse out there. I mean, here he comes to save the day. And he doesn't play small. There's nothing that coaches love more than small players that play big. And Gavin Brindley does that. And he has the skills and the smarts to outplay his size, if that makes sense, which is why he's able to get into scoring areas. He's able to make the plays you're talking about. So he has the hockey brain. He's got the hands. And he's got the highest running motor in the National Hockey League. I mean, he's at 8,000 RPM at all time. And I think that is exactly what is attributed to a lot of his success. Again, that's what's going to put you in positions to win and to be in a coaching staff's good graces. And he's one of my favorite surprises around the entire National Hockey League so far this season.
Is that, looking at that trade, you know, hindsight being 2020, you send Charlie Coyle and Miles Wood away and you get him back. Like, looking at that, this is a guy we expected to be a big presence for the Colorado Eagles. I mean, it blows my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, it's like, you wonder how, with as dismal as Columbus has been for years, I mean, or at least the last two, how does Brindley not even get, like, more than one? He only played one game with the Blue Jackets. Like, how? Why? You know, I'd be fascinated to ask, you know, the development staff of the Blue Jackets and the Lake Erie Monsters, like, okay, what prevented you from putting Brindley in the NHL lineup more, and especially when most of the time you guys were out of the playoffs by March, you know? So
yeah,
that's a fascinating thing for me, because clearly it works. Not everyone can play in a system like the Avalanche and with skilled players. Like, you know, he was up on the top line in the third period in Vancouver and then out on the 3-on-3 to get the overtime winner. Not everyone can just go out there and play with Nathan MacKinnon, but he can. But then he can also play with Barkov and Parker Kelly. Like, he fits in everywhere. And what an asset to have as a player. So 2020 vision says that that's highway robbery for the Colorado Avalanche, who relieve cap space, get picks back, and Gavin Brindley, who is a guy that you now have signed to a two-year extension and literally cannot pull out of the lineup.
He kind of reminds me of a young Brad Marchand, the way he plays a little bit, where he outplays
less of a jerk face. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Less of a lack of a better word, but like how you're saying, how he outplays his size and he has great vision, how he sees the ice.
Yeah. 100%. And I think that was the knock on Marchand too early on, but then when you see him get in there and play bigger than his size, you say, okay, I get it now. And that's very much a compliment for Gavin Brindley.
Changing gears just a little bit here too. One of the bigger storylines, I think, for me personally, looking through the stretch of the first 10 game segment, was the power play. You see it start to get on the board a couple games in, and then it kind of goes to crap, for a lack of a better word. And they've started to kind of find their mojo a little bit ever since that, you know, I don't know if I want to call it highway robbery, but that incredible game against New Jersey, it starts to kind of build. What's the difference maker? What changed for this team?
Shooting the puck changed. In the Jersey game, I mean, the Natchez goal, the MacKinnon goals, I mean, they're all very similar in how they're scored. And, you know, you're playing for the one-timer there. You know, the Lehkonen power play goal in Vancouver, you're playing for the rebound, which I'm not sure they were doing before, but that also involves shooting the puck. So mm-hmm. I think it's now three straight games with the power play goal, if I'm not mistaken. And mm-hmm. so that's more of what you expect from this unit. And everyone knew they would get better. You just had to sort of iron things out, your approach and your movement. And that's the thing, too. I watch opposing PK units like, wait, you were there, and now you're here, and now you're back there again. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Michael Myers out there. No matter how fast you run, like, he's just all of a sudden still in front of you.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's the Avs power play have gotten their movement down more, and they're learning when to shoot and not just shoot for the gorgeous one-timer like you saw in the Jersey game, but shoot for the rebound and for Arturi Lehkonen, who's waiting there in the slot. And if that's taken away, you know, don't be discouraged. Just find other ways. I think that those are the adjustments that the Avs have made in the last 7 or 8 games.
Yeah. I think you mentioned Victor Olofsson and what an addition he has been, not just to this team at 5-on-5 and being able to do what he does. Talk about a heck of a snipe. Mm-hmm. And that's been a huge addition, I think, especially to this first power play unit. Are you kind of pleasantly surprised by what he's been able to add to this Avs team, or is that just, you know, scouting did its job?
Well, I think it's both. You know, I think Olofsson is known as a shooter. Everybody talks about that. I think everyone almost forgot about him because he played in Buffalo. No offense to the Sabres. But, you know, you're about to go over 6,000 days by the time the season's over, that it's been since the Sabres played a playoff game in 2011. So that's not good. But I think because he played in Buffalo, everyone forgot about him. But then he goes to Vegas last year, gets 15 goals, and everyone said, oh, okay. I think it was 6 or 7 on the power play. And they said, okay, we get it. And he's the type of winger that, again, could have gone anywhere, just like Brent Burns, but chose to come to Colorado because of the standard and the culture and the hello and the and everything else. And, that, you know, that says a lot about what the Avs are doing as a group. But, you know, before they signed Olofsson, I said, you know, we just sort of need one more winger on this team. We just sort of need one more. And Raj, I think, even brought up, he said, Olofsson would be perfect on this team. And like a day later, there's the signing of Victor Olofsson. So I texted him. I said, are you Harry Potter or something? Like, what happened?
Is this, are we sure he's not working for,
yeah, exactly.
Is there?
Why aren't you? Anyhow, it was exactly what the Avalanche needed. And, you know, using the assist machine early on and how he's found his scoring touch for the Avalanche. But yeah, they needed one more winger to play in the top 9. And I don't think you could have asked for a better match than Victor Olofsson for that role.
No.
I guess the last question from me, because we know you need to get going here, but I guess the last question for me is, what do you think is the only thing that truly holds this team back come playoff time? Because we know that down the centers, most of all, fix itself, except maybe fourth line. Maybe you don't want Barkov there come playoff just because he is a rookie and maybe that's a little tough on him. You know, goaltending's been shored up. Defense has, you know, with the acquisition of Brent Burns, Malinsky playing well, Girard's now back. Do you see anything in your view that could maybe arise a little bit of concern come March, April, even though it is 4 or 5 months away?
The playoff format.
That's such a good answer. Oh my God. We need to not play Dallas ever again in the first round.
It's just one of those things where, like, even if you play, like, if it started today, or at least I looked yesterday, but you're playing the Blackhawks in the first round. Hey, that'd be fun. I'd do that. That'd be great. You know, say you win that, but then you get the winner of Winnipeg-Dallas after that. And that's just not, I mean, the playoffs aren't supposed to be easy, but it's not. I always feel like the Pacific path is easier than the Central path. Now, that's what made 2022 even more rewarding, because you had to go through the Central path as Central Division champions. And, you know, Nashville was limping a little bit. St. Louis was probably the toughest series of the entire playoffs. And it didn't hurt to play the Oilers with Leon Draisaitl having one ankle hanging off a ligament. So,
not that the Avalanche were much better off by the end of it. But
it's true. That's true. I mean, Valanciunas was being, you know, wheeled out of Amalie Arena in Tampa because his foot was broken in four pieces.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, all joking aside, I think that the Avalanche know what it takes to win now. And I'd be curious if they add, you know, a little more size to the blue line, or they like the way that, you know, the Sams are playing. I mean, Malinsky has been a revelation that not a lot of people are talking about. And, you know, he was on the Adnan Virk and Jason Demers podcast, and you can just tell that he's got his confidence and some swagger back, and that's exactly what you need. Responsible defensively, you know, he chips in with a bunch of helpers, hasn't scored since opening night, but you don't necessarily need him to. I think if you get that sort of performance in your third D pairing, I'm not sure you need to do a ton, but I see the way that this lineup is constructed, and I mean, if you get O'Connor and Kiviranta back, two guys who know how to work, you know, and then you have decisions to make. So I'm not sure that there's a whole lot standing in the Avalanche's way. You know, you just have to remember what it takes to beat a team like Dallas and do a little bit more after that. And I still think far and away you're the best team in the National Hockey League.
Last one for me before we let you drive or enjoy the rest of your drive home. Does Gabe Landeskog need to start carrying around some sage or find whatever voodoo doll is messing up with his scoring?
Yeah. I need to worry
about you in the booth.
Well, there's a listener who called me unprofessional or something the other day because I was freaking out about Gabe Landeskog getting all these goals called back. And like, that, let's be honest, like, that's not exactly goaltender interference. I've heard from multiple people that the first decision on the offside was incorrect. And I think, look, if it was anybody else, I would care less. But you just, I mean, Landeskog is one of the best sports stories, period, in the past decade. And I just, the string of luck is hilarious. So here's what we're all going to do. We're all going to gather around and just say a prayer for Gabe Landeskog. We probably should before every game. And for me to control my temper. That's what we need to do.
Should we do a rain dance, except the rain dance is goals, like a goal dance?
Hey, it's coming, though. You know what I mean? Like, do that rain dance, it will start to rain. Like, Landeskog will. I mean, he scored twice the other night. He's got, you know.
Yep.
You know, only one counted, but I saw a hilarious tweet. It said, "We're going to replace the Gordie Howe hat trick with the Landy hat trick, which is a goal that doesn't count, a fight and an assist. But you can also substitute in a goal that does count. So, if that ever happens again, which has happened three times already, yeah, that's now the Landy hat trick instead of the Gordie Howe hat trick.
We were talking to him today, and he mentioned, he was like, I don't know what the hockey gods have against me this year.
Yeah. But, well, I said, like, hey, I call you the Norse god of hockey. Like, you know, figure it out yourself. You know what I mean? You have connections.
Right.
Make a call to Uller or something. I don't know.
Oh my God. Maybe, you know, I'll take anything. At this point, Connor, thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and I guess I'll see you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
I love Connor.
Connor's
a fun guy.
He is one of my favorite human beings on this planet.
A man of many talents, though. Man of many talents, you know. In-game guy for the Broncos, in-stadium guy for the Broncos, radio broadcaster. I mean, he does it all.
Entrepreneur. Yes. Man of many talents. You would appreciate that, actually. Before we go, Gavin, where can the people find you?
Find me over at Avalanche Digest. We're always posting new stuff, usually after every game, and just fun news stories all regarding your favorite team, the Avalanche. So go check us out over there.
Grant, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Grant_Foster_15. I'm just a regular guy who gets angry at Avalanche games. But I do want to say, for people listening, I'm going to be doing this in the future, but take a shot every time Bailey says, this is a guy who
died. I died of alcohol poisoning.
Okay.
I just wanted to get that out while I had the floor. I felt the spotlight. I wanted to take capture of the spotlight. So
you did a great job. Just kidding. Anyway,
that's rude.
You deserved. Before I shout out all my stuff again, thank you so much to the Hockey Podcast Network for allowing us to do what we do. Big shout out again to DraftKings Sportsbook for sponsoring. If you guys are looking for a show on any of the other 31 NHL teams in the league, the Hockey Podcast Network has a show for you. Check out their website at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or check out their socials at HockeyPodNet on both X and Instagram. If you're looking for some general hockey content, whether that be fantasy, general league news, Terry Ryan from Shoresy has a podcast. They've got everything, you guys. So be sure to go check them out. Give them lots of love. We appreciate them giving the podcast a platform, allowing us to do what we do. With that said, you can find me over on Twitter at Bailey Curtis, Bailey with two Y's. Find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. I'm a credentialed reporter with DNVR for the Colorado Avalanche. So be sure to go check out some of our podcasts and things of that sort over at DNVR_Avalanche. Go check out DNVR Sports at DNVR Sports on X and Instagram. With that, that's going to do it for this episode. Again, thank you so much to Connor McGahee for taking the time to hop on and join us as we talk about the best team in the league. Again, that's going to do it for this episode of the Avalanche Warning. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye.